like all those accolades, but I try to be humble. You know, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. You know. My name is Jean, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, there was a time that someone would have told me 16 years ago that that sentence would be the most important thing I'd ever say in my life. I would have said you were completely crazy, because I came to AA not because I wanted to at all. In fact, I didn't think I had any kind of problems at all. And drinking was not a problem. It was my solution. So I came kind of stomping around. But I just opened up my 12 and 12, and this was funny. I took notes when I first got sober. My last drink was June 10th, 1997. So it's important for me to say that because they say if you don't remember your last drink, it may not have been your last, and I don't want to ever drink again. So, because my life is so much better now without it. But this is what I wrote back in October. Isn't this weird? October 2nd, 1999. October 3rd, 1999. From George. I got sober in Virginia, Alexandria, Virginia. He says, started drinking to have fun, then out of habit, then because I had to. Came to AA first because I had to, then out of habit, then to have fun. That is totally, that's me. That's why. I started drinking at 13 or 14. I grew up in a small town like 45 miles from here in Mineral Point, Wisconsin, on a farm. I have three older brothers, Randy, Steve, and Mike, and then an older sister, Mary, and then I have an identical twin sister, Joyce. And then I have a younger brother, Mark, who's eight years younger. So my mother and dad had about like two families, like three boys, three girls, and a boy. So like when we were 12 or 13, I saw my brothers coming home on the weekends a lot of times with no car. They'd be washing their car all day Saturday and waxing it. And my brother bought a black Monte Carlo in 18. He graduated in 75, so must have been in 74. With gold interior, you know, the vinyl. I'm really into cars, can you tell? Anyway, and he only had it that week of his graduation, 75. And it came home on a wrecker, you know, the next morning. And my dad, it was just very quiet. And his graduation was that night. And he loved that car. He'd only got it, but he just loved it. No one talked about it. And I always thought, wow, that looks like a lot of fun. I mean, like, as far as, like, the drink, preparing for going out on a weekend would look like a lot of fun. And but the next morning, it wasn't a lot of fun. And if you weren't home the next morning, it was really not a lot of fun. And we always knew, so Joyce and I, our first car was a 1977 Buick Special, light blue, two-door. And I'll never forget, my father bought it for us. And we just started drinking, Joyce and I, just started drinking. But it must have been like a rite of passage for my father to get us cars. If I had kids today, the last thing I'd do is get them a car at 16. Unless they were good kids. I mean, not that I was a bad kid, but I just had no right. I didn't know what I was drinking and drove all the time. But with girls in the car, you know, no seatbelts. And so my father comes home at night with this car, and it was like we live in a valley. My mother still lives on the farm. And we saw these car lights coming down the road. Joyce goes, "Did Dad? That's not their car. Did Dad get us a car?" And I'm like, "Oh, God, cool." So he pulls in, and he comes in, and I don't know, my dad was my hero. And he's been gone now 13 years, and he was an alcoholic. So he still was my hero. He was a great guy, great man, worked hard. We just learned to work hard and play hard. We did both. And growing up on a farm, as long as we were home by 3 or 4 in the morning, slept and got up on the tractor or whatever we were doing the next morning, it was okay. We might be hungover, we may still be a little drunk, but Dad and Mom didn't care. Well, Mom might have cared. But Dad was like, get outside and get outdoors, work it off. But he never ever talked about my drinking because he drank, I think. But he worked really hard, and he's been dead 13 years from this disease, so he died of esophageal cancer. And I was 2 years sober. I'm so grateful. I was 2 years sober and my father died. So he saw me not drink. And he hated it when I drank. One of my last drunks was when my grandmother died in 1996 in October. I'm kind of snipping around, but I don't like to talk a lot about my drinking because we all know what that's about. You drink too much, you fall down, you do crazy things. But like the end of my year, the year before I got sober, things were really ratcheting up, and I didn't even know it. I was 30, 29 or 30. And I had a job, I'd gone to college, I really was the apple of my dad's eye, really. I'd done everything that I thought would make him happy, but you know, I found out later, you can't make anybody happy. I mean, it's not anybody's job to make you happy, and it's not my job to make anybody else happy. So I was looking for approval from my dad, and he wasn't even wanting. He was totally fine with me, except my drinking. So one day he walked into, and here my mother just lost her mother, and I'd been in town with my three older brothers, and my sisters didn't drink like I did. So, oh well. I like to drink with the men, to be honest. Because they could stick with me, and I had a lot of fun in bars. That's how I drank. I didn't get to a point where I was drinking at home yet, alone or any of that stuff. It probably would have happened, but I think I would have thought I had a problem then. If I did that, if I was drinking at home every night, I'm not sure. Maybe not. But I like to drive and drink, so that would have been really scary. All bets are off when I started drinking. I didn't have any thinking. I didn't think about drinking and driving. I just never had an off switch. I just went. I was my own party, let's just say that. With the radio on and me, I was good. So anyway, my dad walks into the Royal Inn in Mineral Point, and he had been looking for us, the kids. Because my mom had just lost, he had just buried Grandma Clayton. I don't know what I was thinking, but I wasn't thinking about anybody but me. That's really what it was. Dad walked in, and I was buying a drink to a married man across the bar, and he was going through a divorce, but he was a farmer. Anyway, my dad, that was what I said to my, that's how I rationalized it. Because I said, get Mr. Marr over there, whatever he wants, and get anybody else, any farmers in the bar, and that's how I was. I was really egotistic. I didn't know it, but I had a lot of pride, ego. But I wanted to be known, so I spent money a lot at the beginning before I got drunk, and then everybody else would buy me drinks later. So, anyway, my dad walked in when I was doing that, yelling and stuff like that. And, you know, my mother is so dainty and so, no one's met, well, Lisa's met my mom, but she's just very graceful and didn't drink. And she saw me, oh, gee, you know. And I was drinking out of a long neck, a bottleneck, you know, I drank beers out of it. Could you just pour it in a glass? Could you just pour it in a glass? I said, Mom, no. So my dad just goes, young lady, we are going home. And I fell off the bar stool. I had a suit on, and all my brothers were there. When my dad talked, and he wasn't drunk then, but he wanted to make a point that this is not cool at 4 o'clock in the afternoon getting drunk when your mother's mom just died. And I go, well, we're taking it. Mike's like, well, Dad, we invited a bunch of people home. I've got a case of Budweiser coming. He's like, well, bring it with us. We're getting out of here right now. And so we get in the car. You know, I was 29 years old. Remember, my dad never passed me like that. Pull me off the bar stool. It was really embarrassing. But I had a what for him in the car, let me tell you. So here, and my brother Mike was here with a case of Budweiser. My brother Mark was in the middle, and I was sitting on the side. My dad was driving, and my mom was just sitting straight ahead. And he called me some names that I couldn't believe. I said, what did you just call me, Dad? That's what you were acting like in there. That's the kind of girl I raised? And I said, you do not know me at all if you think I'm the that and the that. And he's like, I said, I've done everything in my life to be just what you wanted for a daughter and blah, 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 blah. My brothers didn't say nothing. And I was hell-bent to go back to Chicago. I was living in Chicago at the time. And my brother Mike was living in Chicago too. He knew that was my ride. His ride was me. and didn't say nothing. And we get home, and all our first cousins came out behind us. They were falling out of their cars drunk. You know, I wasn't the only drunk, but I was the only woman drunk. And women alcoholics are a little different than male alcoholics. I didn't see the difference because I drank with anybody. But I guess in my father's eyes, that they were different. So they all proceeded to come in the house, and my dad did loosen up a little. He had a couple drinks, but you could tell he was upset. So I was upstairs packing. I'm out of here. Yeah, I've been drinking all day. And my brother Mike comes up, Gene, we're not going back to Chicago tonight, are we? I said, we certainly are. I'm not staying here. The way you talk to me, you might know. Gene, sit down. Let me tell you something. Let me just tell you something about Dad. Don't ever expect to get an apology, and never hold a grudge. I said, really? I go, because, he goes, and yelling isn't going to do anything about this. Can we just be about mom right now? Can we just make it about mom? I go, well, do you mind if I just stay up here then? And he goes, here's a couple of beers, whatever. Come down when you're done. So whatever. So we didn't go home that night. So thank God I didn't drive home. So the next morning, he was right about my dad. He didn't hold a grudge. So I get up in the morning, and I'm, you know, how you get, kind of feel like ready to go at 4 or 5 in the morning. I'm downstairs, and the door was a very small farmhouse. We grew up, I can't believe, one bathroom for 7 kids. Well, now I know why they had 4 and 3, because there was no way. But we never had the door closed, hardly ever. Come in and out, in and out. So anyway, the door was closed. I'm like, I wonder who's in there. I'm like, knock, knock, knock. Hey! Oh, Dad. Yeah. I thought I could get out of here, you know. Morning. I said, morning, chicken. He goes, morning, chicken. I said, Dad. That's it. He looked at. Okay, that was it. That was him sorry, I guess, because I never got any more sorry, but that was it. So anyway, I go back to Chicago, and I was a binge drinker. I wasn't someone that drank every day. So fast forward to, like, the weekend before I got sober. I was in a wedding Thursday, Friday. So that means you drink Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, basically. And then the Bulls were in the playoffs, Chicago Bulls, so Sunday night, Monday. And I never used to call in sick to work either. I was a nurse at Children's Memorial Hospital in Chicago. And I was a night nurse. So I had the weekend off. And I proceeded, because the man I was dating at the time didn't give me a diamond that weekend. You know. God, you know, I dodged a bullet. Believe me, I dodged a bullet on that one. I want, because that's what they tell you. You know, sometimes you, well, what is it? How do you make God laugh? Make plans or something? I had big plans. He was going to give me a diamond. We've been together 5 years. I've been toiling for this diamond, and my sisters both were having kids at the time. And I was like, what's wrong with me? It was all about pity me. And meanwhile, you know, I wouldn't want someone that didn't want me. I mean, this is like kind of crazy. He didn't want an alcoholic for a wife. I mean, he'd drive me home, and he'd stay with me drinking just because he had to drive me home. And he grew up with a dad that was a drunk, so I guess he saw too much of his past in me. I really think so. But this is kind of a funny story. We celebrated my 30th birthday at Door County, and we went to see Washington Island on that weekend. And everything's like the year before I got, like 6 months. I'm right there. And we've been drinking. On my birthday was on a Friday. And on Saturday, we got up and took a ferry over to Washington Island. And he said to me, and it was really a dead pause, he goes, you know, Jean, if you're not careful, someday you'll end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. What do you mean by that? He was drinking. And he goes, I don't know, Jean. You might have to say, hi, my name is Jean. I'm an alcoholic someday. I said, oh, really? And I thought, I just kind of laughed about it. I don't know, but it was kind of a premonition, I think. So we proceeded to have a good weekend. It was just kind of like, that's what he said. So anyway, this one Monday, my last drink was at a bar called John Barleycorn in Lincoln Park, Chicago. Isn't that kind of fitting for me? So anyway, just not any clue was my last drunk, or my last drink. Otherwise, I would have bought like a double shot, triple shot, Long Island, and give me a couple shots of Jägermeister to go, you know. I mean, I had no clue. That's why I know that this was nothing about Gene wanting to find God or Gene wanting to get sober. It was really about God saving my life, or just somebody coming, intervening. And who it was my roommate. It was a nursing school roommate of mine. And I had called her because I said, Marty didn't give me a dime. Well, let's meet for a drink. I said, yeah, I'd love that. Let's go. I go, but I got to work tonight. Call in sick. I'm calling in sick. I said, okay. So I called in sick. So that's just started happening. I never did that before. If I was hungover, you know, nights that was okay because you could sleep all day. But I called in sick to drink that day. But I'd been drinking pretty much 5 days in a row. So I hadn't been eating or sleeping. I was really out of it. So she sounded like, let's go, Jean. Let's go, Fink's my nickname. So we meet at John Barleycorn, and I think she saw me, and she's like, she was really freaked out. She's like, Jean, how long have you been drinking? You look really bad. And I was like, that hurt me, kind of, because I didn't like that. Especially when I was on a really good buzz, be told I didn't look good. But, and by someone I love, though, Rosie. And she hadn't been drinking yet. So she's like, have you been drinking? It's 1 o'clock. Have you had a couple drinks? I go, well, I was out till 4 or 5 with people from work. And okay, so let's get something. Jean, you just need something to eat. So we start eating. And the funniest thing, I never drank beer with any Tutti Frutti, apple brewery, or I never did any of the apple cider. I just drank beer. You know, Guinness, usually Guinness. Black and Tans is what I liked. And I ordered a apple cider beer. It was just when those taps were coming out with all different flavors. And that's weird because I never would have done that. So, and I started drinking it, and then the food came, and I just got a huge buzz off like a half of that beer. And I said, let's put the music on. People were just having their lunch. It was a Tuesday afternoon, June 10th. It was a Tuesday. So I started putting the music on and playing my music, and then I started dancing. It was whatever. And, Lisa, Rosie got the waitress. She goes, can you just package this food? This is when you know someone really cares about you. She really cared about me. She goes, package this food, Jean, let's go. I go, where are we going to go? She goes, we're going to go for a walk. We're going to leave. We're not going to drink anymore. I said, okay. She goes, and then we're walking in the alleyway to her car. She's like, is there any mental illness in your family? I will never forget this. Because it was just so, that's how nurses are, though. We're kind of deadpan, you know. Yeah. We just asked it. And I said, not that I know of, Rosie. Not that I know of. She goes, because you kind of seem to have a manic episode in there. Kind of like I'm just wondering about bipolar or something. No, and then it gave me pause. It gave me pause, let me say. She goes, what are you willing to do? I'm just wondering, I'm afraid to leave you alone right now. And she goes, well, let's go back to my apartment. Let's see. We'll call my other roommate friend, Stephanie. There were three of us that went to nursing school together. Stephanie's married now, but let's call Stephanie because she always had the answers. She didn't drink like Rosie and I did. So Stephanie said, well, you need to take her to the emergency room. We need to get her to the, oh, no, no, Rosie goes, I don't think she's that bad. No, no. She goes, well, I don't know. I just don't want to leave her here. I'm afraid she'll drink some more. So anyway, long and the short of it is Stephanie won, and I ended up in the psych ward in the ER of Northwestern Memorial Hospital. And Rosie's a golden friend because she stayed with me. And I did have a brother living in Chicago at the time, so he met me there, Steve, with his partner. He has yet to forget that night. I kind of wish they'd forget that night, but he still brings it up sometimes. Like, God, Steve, I've been sober 16 years. You have to talk about the night when I was like, Dr. Hot was the ER physician. She was a beautiful woman. Beautiful woman, and she was the attending in the ER that night, and I was like flirting with her. And, Dr. Hot! Dr. Hot! And surely, I mean, he had to be there. It was not funny. Believe me. Because I talk about that story now to Steve, and he has no laughter at all about it. And I know it wasn't funny, and Rosie, no one was laughing but me. But she was really pretty, and I was with a man at the time. I wasn't even out as a lesbian yet. So it was like, obviously I had it in me. I had something in me. So anyway, here, Rosie stayed with me. They triaged me, and I wasn't going to kill myself. I wasn't a harm to myself or others. So I hadn't sat there in the triage for a while. And then all of a sudden, they took me to the psych ward, and that's when things started getting serious. They wheeled me into this, you know, the psych ward. I'd never been in the hospital before, and definitely not for my drinking, you know. And I still was kind of manic. Well, I was. I can kind of get that way today if I have too much caffeine, don't sleep, don't eat. I had to really take care of myself. Woo, keep it really quiet. And I can do that now, but it's been a long time coming because it's a part of me I've accepted, that I might have a little of that manic depressive going on, but I know now why I drank, because it was self-medicating those moods when I was a teenager. I was more on the depressive side as a teenager, and then when I got in college, I became more the manic side. So anyway, that's what I was diagnosed with, and the nurse checked me in, and of course I had to tell everybody I was a nurse, which why I did that, but got more special attention, which... But you know, after 2 days being in the psych ward, I really started feeling like I belonged. I was like, I had my own room. There was bars on the windows, and you know, that was kind of scary. And then I had to do the music, the crafts and all that stuff. So. And I'm like about as crafty as nobody. And I had to make this. And then that's when I started thinking, this isn't for me. Because these are people that are like mumbling to themselves, walking in circles, going in this way. And I was like, I thought it was like above all that. But what happened was I had to write a, because I came in with my blood alcohol, BSA was 0.3 or something like that. And I've been drinking for 5 days, really, not eating, so I'm not surprised. But I think they were a little surprised. So they wanted me to write a history of, like, my drinking in the psych ward. The doctor did. The psychiatrist. And I thought I was there for a mental illness. You know, I thought I was there for my mind, not for my drinking. So, but I just wrote honestly. I guess that's one thing. I do have a gift of honesty. I can't help but be honest, almost to a fault sometimes. But I just know when I'm not honest, I can't live out. I can't do one thing and say another. I've just never been that way, really. So anyway, I just wrote honestly how much I drank and when I started drinking, and it was like 3 or 4 pages long, both sides. And I really thought it was a really good essay. I really thought it was interesting. Well, hey, Dr. So-and-so called me in. Ms. Finkelmeyer, I'd like to see you. I want to go over this. My first question was, when am I getting out of here? When am I getting out of here? And he said, well, hold on. 8 days, probably. But I want to go over some of these answers about your drinking. I said, I'm not here for my drinking. I'm here for my mind, my head. Oh, no, you're here for both. And I said, oh, really? He goes, you have a problem with alcohol. I said, I do. And it was a shocker. Let me tell you. I don't think so, and I really didn't think so. I really thought, get me some good food, some sleep, and I'll get back to work. But I didn't tell him that. But he said, well, I need you to get, there's a meeting tonight in the unit. They come in. I go, what kind of meeting? And he goes, an AA meeting. I said, God. But I said, he goes, you're not getting out of here until you go to some meetings. I said, okay. So I went. And Rosie, being the golden friend that she was, she showed up to the psych ward, to the meeting. And Marty at that time was barred from coming in to the psych ward. He wasn't surprised. He told my sister Joyce Jean was going down. And he kind of felt some guilt about that because he didn't give me a diamond. He knew we fought that whole weekend. And I drank a lot that weekend at him. So, anyway, the speaker was this woman. Beautiful girl, lady, like in her 70s. And just in a suit. It was me, two other people from the psych ward, and then Rosie. And I just cried. I was just crying. And at the end of her talk, she came over to me and she said, Jean, can I have your number? And I was like, no. She goes, well, I'd like to call you maybe when you get out. I said, well, I don't know when I'm getting out. But for some reason, I gave her my number. Her name was Ellen. So she'd been sober 34 years, and she had talked about ending up on a park bench, lost her family in downtown Chicago, and that was for drinking, and I was like, I hadn't done that bad. I couldn't relate, but I did relate to her feelings about wanting to drink and needing to drink, the compulsion and how it took everything. Like, the drink takes the drink. The woman takes the drink takes the drink, and the drink takes the woman. The drink hadn't taken me yet, but it was close. It was close. It was coming. So it had taken her. So I got out in 8 days, and I remember thinking, I just got on my knees. Because I thought, when you're in a locked cell for, I thought it was a locked cell for 8 days, you really think your world is over. But actually, my world was just beginning. So I hit my knees. Thank you, God. It was a beautiful day. It was June, whatever, 18th. I was like, oh, God, help me, God. I feel good. And so I go home. And my roommate, Rosie, didn't live with me then. I had another roommate. She said, this Ellen girl keeps calling. This Ellen lady keeps calling. And would you call her back? There's 8 messages. So, I was like, what does she want? And I just wanted to get back to work. I mean, I was on FMLA from work. No one knew what was going on. I knew I had, like, explaining to do. But I drank with all the people I worked with, so I didn't know. I wasn't sure about, that was my first meeting. I didn't even know if it was a meeting. So but it was someone telling their story, and I related to it. And that's what they say meetings are, one drunk talking to another. That's meeting. So you don't have to be in a four-walled building. So I called her. Ellen, hi, this is Jean. I'm calling you back. I don't know really why you're calling, but I'm calling you back. She's like, well, Jean, I was just wondering if you would meet me tomorrow at noon. And I said, for what? She said, well, for a meeting. I said, what kind of meeting? AA meeting. I go, I said, I got my laundry to do. I've got to do some cleaning. I go, I've got some things. No, no, Jean, can I just ask, can you do, it'll be the most important hour of your life. Mm-hmm. And I said, I repeated back, did you say the most important hour of my life? She said, yes. I said, well, I'll meet you there. And it was at a church right across from that big shopping mall downtown Chicago. Not Bloomingdale's, whatever, that big place. But anyway, so here she is, waiting outside the church, and I met her there, and I hadn't been drinking. So we go in, and all I remember about it was they were all ages like of my mom and dad, like in their 70s, 60s and 70s. And I was the youngest, of course. But everybody was really happy that Ellen brought me, this woman. They were all like really happy about that. Jean said, I said, well, it's my first meeting. And I don't know. Okay, Jean, welcome, Jean. And I don't know if I didn't want to say anything about alcohol at all because I didn't think I was an alcoholic, so I didn't want to say that. But I did just for Ellen. You know. So we leave after the meeting. They were so friendly, and everybody was happy. So we leave, and Ellen goes out after. She goes, well, I hope, you know, and Marty picked me up. Marty came up next to me to pick me up, and I said, can I ask you something? And she said, what? I go, does it work if you're with someone that drinks? You know. She's like, why? She goes, I go, because Marty, you know. She goes, well, when you hang around a barbershop, sometimes you'll usually get a haircut. That's what she said. And I didn't get that. I did not get that. I was like, what now? She goes, well, you'll know what I mean. I said, okay. I got in the car, and he smelled like alcohol. Because he had a couple drinks. He's driving. I just felt weird. Felt kind of strange. Because I felt like I got the answer of something, but I also had a wonderful, I thought, like, here. How was I going to make these two go, you know? So he's like, well, want to go to Bruno's? I said, yeah, we can go to Bruno's. And that's where we drank in Rogers Park with Bruno's. It was like a dive. It was just a dive, but it was such a cool bar. One side was a carry-out bar, you know, one of those liquor stores. And then one side, we'd all watch those people come in and out, and then we'd be watching. And there was like nothing on this floor but just dirt, you know? It was a perfect place for my mom to find me. Believe me, my mother would have loved me there in that bar. So anyway, we go there, and I couldn't really sit down. I felt kind of fidgety, and I don't think Marty really thought I was going to take this serious. I know he thought that maybe I had a problem, but I don't think he thought I was serious enough to quit. I don't know. So we sat down, and they said, Jean, what do you have? And I said, I'll just have a Coke. And then, you know, give me a pop, and Marty bought all these people bars. And I just felt, you know, I'm not sure about this. And I was only there for about 10 or 15 minutes. I said, you know what, Marty, I'm going to go. He goes, where? I go, I'm going to get to a meeting. You are? I said, yeah, I'll just take the L. And that was my first time of ever going to a meeting by myself. But I knew I needed to go somewhere. I knew I couldn't stay there. And I actually never felt like that in the bar before. I never felt uncomfortable. And now I go to bars a lot to eat. I have no problem at all. But when you're only 10, 20 days sober, it was a little daunting to know that people in the world don't drink. A little daunting to know that I always thought everybody drank. And I was really confused. Let me just say I was confused. So I went to a meeting at Mustard Seed downtown in Lincoln Park by myself. And I didn't say I was an alcoholic yet, but I just said, hi, I was Jean. I don't know why I'm here. I'm here. And, okay, welcome, Jean. I don't know what I have. And then I kept going back to that meeting, and all of a sudden someone hit me under the table. When are you going to get honest or something? This guy. When are you going to get honest? I said, whew! Okay, hi, I'm Jean. I'm an alcoholic. And then all of a sudden things just really got lighter. I was just resisting it. And I think I had 2 months sober then, 2 or 3 months sober, when I found out you can get a coin every month for being sober. So then, of course, I wanted my 1 month and my 2 months and my 3 months. I didn't know we got coins every month. So I got a coin for every month, and now I have 16 years on my hand. I only get one a year now, but in your first year, you get a different color, you know, black, blue. Well, Maggie knows all about the colors. So for me, it was really important every month getting a coin. So I decided at 4 months of sobriety to leave Chicago and become a traveling nurse. And I thought my so-called possible husband would come out and get me, you know. Well, he left me. He stayed in Chicago, and I went out there. And I'll never forget, I loved his mother. His mother loved me. But she told him, if you let Jean go, you're not going to get her. Oh, she'll be back. And I never did come back. He visited me once, and he told me he wouldn't drink, and I thought that was great. And I said, okay, I'll just take you to this. I'm going to go to a meeting, and then I'll come back and get you at my apartment. And I guess he couldn't hold that promise, because I came to get him, and it was really a hard time. It was a hard time, because I really kind of thought he might come with me along this road, if that happy marriage stays sober, and life will be great. And I came to pick him up, and he looked ripped. I go, Marty, and I loved him. I know what love is now. That was what I thought love was. It wasn't love. It was really about control, power and control. I wanted something from him, and I thought he was the best candidate at 29. You know, I had no other takers, and so anyway, but I did love him in kind of a strange way. So I just was like, really, my gut just. I thought I was going to throw up because he said he wasn't going to drink that weekend. And he had red eyes, and he knew I was upset. I said, well, how many drinks have you had? So Gina tried, but they kept I got really thirsty. I'm just really thirsty. And I said, how many have you had? I've only been gone an hour and a half. He said, I've had six. I said, six. So then I just head to the bathroom, and then I thought to myself, okay, what do I do? And I called my sponsor. That's what we have sponsors for. You call them before you take a drink, not after. Mm-hmm. It's not that I wanted to drink, but I was scared. Because I really kind of thought, I didn't know what I thought, but I was scared. So Sarah goes, well, do you want a drink? I said, no. She goes, well, then get the hell out of there and take that guy out, get him on the first plane back home to Chicago. She called him a doormat. That's what she called him. He's a doormat. So not that night. She told me that later. But I don't know. He was a good guy. I loved him. But so anyway, I came out and go, Marty, we're leaving. Right now? Can I finish my drink? I said, no, we are not finishing your drink. We are leaving. And then the next morning, we just fought the whole night. He said, God, you know, just because you're an alcoholic doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic. I said, I'm not saying you're an alcoholic. I'm just saying that, God, you say you're not going to drink, and then he's drunk. So we fought. It was terrible. So he left the next day. And then he got engaged 6 months later to somebody else. So now he's married with two kids. So whatever. I wasn't supposed to have that man. I trained him well, though, for 5 years. I trained him well. Good cook, good cleaner. You know, I'm not a cook, so he cooked for me. So anyway, long and short of it is that my life began, and I thought it was over. My life began on June 10th, 1997, and I thought it was done. I didn't even talk about the big book, but one of the things that they talked about, like, I didn't know, I knew I, so I gave, they gave me this book in the psych ward, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I took it home and I put it on the bookshelf, but the other way around, because I didn't want to have it. I just was like, why do you give me this book? I'm not an alcoholic, but, ooh, I'll take it, something free. So anyway, one night, I got bored, I guess. I was bored, I couldn't sleep, I had a hard time sleeping. So I started reading. And I'm a really good reader, but the doctor's opinion is actually what got me thinking I might have a problem, that maybe there is something to this alcoholism thing, and maybe I am an alcoholic, because it talked about the obsession of the mind and the physical allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, and that once you take a drink, you can't stop, and how the phenomenon of craving takes over and you can't stop. The first drink gets you drunk, kind of thing. And I'm reading it. It says right here, men and women drink essentially because this is from Dr. Silkworth. Back in 1935, he wrote this, or He was the medical director in New York in the town's hospital in New York where Bill W. got sober, Phil and Dr. Bob. So he saw a lot of chronic alcoholics. So he said they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over unless this person can experience an entire psychic change. There's very little hope of his recovery. And the psychic change for me was one of the first things, and I believed in I grew up in Catholic school and the whole nine yards, all that stuff, but I never believed in any power greater than me. I was my own designer, my own planner, my own architect. I mean, life was getting me down. By the time I got into AA, anybody could have my life. I was just so down from like trying to run my life. You know, I wasn't getting married. I wasn't being a mother. I wasn't all the things that I thought meant that I'd have a good life. I mean, I had, you know, a college degree and I had a good job, but I hated, I didn't fit in. So when I drank, I fit in. But the problem is, you just can't stay drunk 24/7. I can't, you know, 24/7 is wonderful, but you got to live. You got to get up and, you know, life's got to happen. And so to come into a place where people said, you know, Jean, we'll love you till you can love yourself. And this one woman said she sponsored me. And so anyway, I ended up in Washington, D.C., Virginia, September of 97, and I met my sponsor at that first meeting called Flounders. And I really did a geographic. I really thought I'd be drinking again. Although I didn't know. I felt better, but I remember I had my coin. I had 4 months. It was a black one. And I remember I had my coin driving over, and I had nothing but in the back of my Ford Probe. Everything fit in the back of my Ford Probe. I love that. Life was so simple back then. Now, if I want to do a geographic, I have to sell a house. I have to leave. You know what I mean? It's too much crap now. I can't just drive it. I love just to take off in a car and go. You know? But now that I'm sober and put roots down, my sponsor said, once you buy a vacuum cleaner, maybe you'll stick around. She's laughing at me because I was just kind of, I wasn't sure where I wanted to go. But she said, just stay here for a while. Can you just stay in one place for a year? Move. I said, okay. So anyway, I met her. She was sitting at the end of this long table called Flounders. It was a meeting called Flounders. Now I know why that is called Flounders, because we're floundering vessels and we all escape misery. And anyway, but it was a great meeting, and she was sitting at the end, and I was exhausted. I had driven like 14 hours that day. And she goes, are you new? I'll never forget. Are you new? And I was like, yes, I'm kind of new. I go, I'm new to here. She goes, well, sit down next to me. I said, okay. And she was the happiest, most put-together girl in the room. And I needed somebody because I was not put together, not happy, very, like, not sure about this. And she gave me her card, and she said, there's a women's meeting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. at this church. I'll draw you directions. And she tore off her, you know, I do that now, too. I tear off my deposit slip sometimes for people for my phone numbers. And she did it to me. And at the end of her name was ESQ. And I thought that meant she worked for the Esquire. That's how stupid I was. It meant that she was an attorney, whatever. I didn't, Esquire. But, so anyway, I called her. And I said, I'm coming to the meeting. She goes, oh, great. I go, do you work for the Esquire? She goes, what? I go, no, ESQ. No, that means I'm an attorney for whatever. So, of course, I thought, whoo, that's cool. I'm not someone like that. But it's not about that. I just got lucky. That's what she was very smart. And she was all about the big book. And she was all about the steps. 12 and 12. She bought me my first 12 and 12. She brought it to the meeting. And I asked her to be my sponsor. And she said, I'd be honored to be your sponsor. Oh, I was so scared. And she said, I said, how much time do you have? How long have you been sober? She goes, 18 months. I said, oh. I had 4 months. And I said, she goes, you'll be my first one. I said, well, you're my first one. So we started laughing. And we spent the day together. And I just tell the story because when you find another alcoholic and you start talking, you just can't not be truthful. It's just kind of hard. We're driving down the road, and she had this big German Shepherd. And I, at that time, wasn't a dog person. I was kind of afraid of dogs, to be honest. And she had a pickup truck. She totally didn't fit the picture from the night before. She had a suit on. Next day, she had, like, workout clothes. So, like, you know, alcoholics, we look like, you know, we're just normal Joe Schmoes. Nothing different, nothing unique. So anyway, we get in this Pinto, white Pinto, and this her day. She goes, are you okay with dogs? I said, oh, yeah, I'm okay with dogs. She goes, well, he won't bother you. Yeah. I go, wow, he's a big dog. And so he had his neck, like, what's his name? She goes, Tash. I go, oh, okay, cool, Tash. And we're driving down the Beltline, and we're going to a craft fair. Whatever she did, I was going to do. And I just said to her, I go, can I say something to you? She says, sure. I go, I think I might be a lesbian. Just like that. And she says, oh, well, let's just get you sober. We'll worry about that later. And that's when I just thought to myself, oh, my God, she's okay. She's not going to come. I'll never forget that. And we still laugh about, she lives in Denver now, and she's got 17 years of sobriety. And I go to conferences, and I saw her in San Antonio 2 years ago, the International AA conference, and we met in the middle, and she's married, and has another dog, Cash passed on, another dog. And then she goes to me, I go, Sarah, do you remember what I first said to you in that truck ride? All the way? She goes, yeah. And I go, and do you remember what I said back? And she goes, do you remember? I said, yeah. She just said, let's just get you sober. And I still use that today. Like when someone wants me to sponsor them, they'll say something major, I'm going through a divorce, or I'm trying to leave my husband, or let's not worry about that. Let's just get you sober. Because it's two separate things. Getting sober in your life is kind of, now, this is a way of life. I mean, it's a way to life. Doing the steps for me, it was a way to life. I was isolating myself from my drinking. I was not living. So we sat down once a week and read the first step. And I had a problem with being alcoholic, so she had me write down what I did when I drank. And then she said, does that look like powerlessness to you? I said, yeah. And does your life look unmanageable? And I said, I don't know. Let's sit on that. Well, let's just don't drink a day at a time. I said, okay. So I got the first step at 6 months, and then we started doing the rest of the steps. And now it's just like they work me. I don't really work them. They kind of work me. When I make a mistake, I promptly admit it. I say I'm sorry, and I say I won't do this again. It's just because I don't want to go to bed with any insanity in my head. I lived so long with insane, just bad thoughts, and I don't like that, because I have to say that I can't believe I'm saying this, but I can believe I'm saying this, that I'm my own best friend, and that, you know, for 30 years I was a terrible friend. I wouldn't have had me for a friend, and now I can't imagine not having this person right here. And I'll end with the best definition I've heard of honesty in my whole life. My best definition, and was from a woman out in Virginia. She said, honesty, and that's the most important part, step one is honesty, is complete harmony of thought, word, and deed. And that's authenticity, I think. If I'm thinking and saying and doing, everything matches up. I don't have to worry about making a lot of messes for me to do the ninth step or make amends with or to do problems with if I'm living in honesty. Because I'm no longer anybody else but me. And if I make mistakes, I make mistakes. But, you know, life is not like a drudgery anymore. Life is like, every day I wake up, I'm happy to be alive. So I will just end with my favorite saying in the big book, my favorite paragraph. And I want to thank the people from work that came to hear me tonight, because I would not be a good employee if I wasn't sober. And my beautiful partner, Lisa. I would not have the life I am to have today without her love. And we've been through a lot together, and without being sober, it wouldn't be worth it. So we have been speaking, this is on page 132, the family afterwards. We have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things. We have been dealing with alcohol in its worst aspect, but we aren't a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We try not to indulge in cynicism over the state of the nations, nor do we carry the world's trouble on our shoulders. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, man or woman, that is alcoholism, we give him first aid and place what we have at his disposal. For his sake, we do recount and almost relive the horrors of our past. But those of us who have tried to shoulder the entire burden and trouble of others find we are soon overcome by them. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and have been given the power to help others. So thanks for coming and thanks for listening.